Hello there, and you're very welcome to Tech Thursday. This is Patrick Sheehan with you for the next hour or so, answering any questions you might have tech-related. Any time during the week, as I always say, you can email reception102@gmail.com. That's probably the best way, because you can kind of flesh out your question, anything you have tech-related. And I'll get back to you on the next show, which is every Thursday. You can also call 069-66200, or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800. Anything tech-related, and I'll do my best to answer it on the next show. Actually, to start off, we have a question, actually, from Jim in Kilmeade. And he was saying, no, he said the name, but I'm not going to say the name, but his satellite TV subscription, he finds that the price is going very high. At the moment, it's going up and up, and he was kind of complaining that it's getting a bit too expensive for him. But he's just asking about the alternatives and how would he go about setting them up and things like that. So I suppose the best, it depends on the type of TV you have to start off with. It'd be the easiest. Say you cut off your satellite dish and you want to see what you can do now. Now, if you have a smart TV with built-in apps, you can get all your subscriptions, your usual, you know, Amazon, Netflix, Disney, those kind of things. You can subscribe to. There's the built-in apps on the TVs. If you have a pretty good TV, they should work okay. Some of them, any TVs I've had, I've always bought TVs with just the best quality screen I can get, rather than the software built in. Now, sometimes if you have both, but I'd be going for the best value for money, or kind of a more budget orientated one. So I'd be kind of sacrificing the software on purpose, because I use external products like the PS5 or Roku or Xiaomi Mi Stick or different things to run the apps. So if you have a built-in TV, we'd say some of the Android ones work quite well, and the apps, the best way to try it out is, like, you have to connect it to the internet. So some of them have a LAN plug-in in the back. If you have your router near your TV, you can run a cable from your router into the back of the TV and connect it that way. Otherwise, you might have to, some of them have built-in Wi-Fi. These are the smart TVs now. Some of them have built-in Wi-Fi. Some of them you have to buy like an extra dongle. But some, they're more the older ones. Depends on the age of your TV as well. That you, like a thing you can plug in the back, a little antenna that you can pick up Wi-Fi. Most have it built in. So you could search for your internet through the settings and put in the password, and you can connect to it that way. And then you can download the apps. I suppose the best way to try it out, to see if your TV, rather than go away and buy some like a Roku or something like that, the best way to start off would be get your internet connected to your TV if you can. And then install like YouTube and things like that, and see how quick it loads up. Most of them load up on one of the good ones, pretty quick, you know, a little bit slower than your phone. It's not going to be as fast as a good phone, we'll say, but it should be close enough. And now if it's very, very slow, and I've had my old LG TV, it was a very good TV at the time, you know, it was like one of the good 1080p TVs years ago, and it had smart TV and all that. It was almost unusable. The apps and stuff were pretty poor, to be honest. They'd load up like Netflix or whatever I had at the time. They would load up, but even when they're playing, it's like I had slow internet, even though I didn't, you know, that kind of way. And I had the LAN cable plugged in the back of it. So it was just a poor driver for all that kind of stuff. And the hardware wasn't good enough, and probably software wasn't brilliant either. So if it's very slow, the best way is, I suppose, install YouTube on it. And because that's free and you don't have to subscribe to anything. And well, I suppose you could subscribe to whatever you wanted anyway. And then if it doesn't work, just get something else and put it on. But if your TV is good enough, all you have to do is search their app store or whatever and install whatever you want to sign up to. You can sign up, and it's kind of, there's different prices for different ones. Depends on what you want to watch. You know, if you have kids in the house and there's a lot of kids, you know, you might prefer Disney. If it's more of an all-rounder thing, Amazon and Netflix are kind of similar. Netflix would have more of a, probably more of a library, all right. Amazon is kind of up and coming. There's some deals that you can get some of them, like the likes of Amazon, I think, come with certain air packages, or so you might be able to, with your broadband package, you might get some of them for free, or you might just have to sign in, and depends on which package you have. And there's lots of different bundle deals and things like that. So there is, say if your TV, right, isn't even a smart TV maybe, and you just want to, you need something to be able to, you want to download some of these apps and subscribe to them and things like that, you're getting rid of your satellite dish. I suppose, as I said, some of the, like there's, if you're used to the Amazon, kind of, if you have Alexas and things like that, you might be interested in the Fire Stick. They're very cheap and they work pretty well. My brother has one of them, and he has a lot of stuff on it and finds it works pretty good. So you can just plug those in. Some of them have, there's different, like the likes of Roku's and other ones. Some of them have a LAN plug-in where you can actually plug a LAN into it. Other ones have Wi-Fi, but I've actually haven't had any. I've had Android boxes, but some of them can be very dodgy for, like, how well they play different things, and they don't even have permission. Actually, you have to be careful about them, because a lot of them are just kind of generic Android software on them, and they don't allow the likes of Disney to work, because Disney have a kind of a strong security when it comes to who it allows to use it. You know, the likes of, say, Roku or Sony for the new PlayStation have to get permission from Disney, have to get the proper encoding and everything to be allowed to install the app, play the videos and things like that. So a lot of those Android boxes wouldn't have permission to do that. So you have to be very careful with those. I'd be going more for kind of like name brand stuff, or kind of like the sticks and the... So out of all the ones I've tried, I think the best performing is probably the Roku, for just the simplicity of installing the apps. Now, it doesn't run on Android. It runs on Linux, and it's kind of a very simple setup. But for, like, speed, if someone said to me, you have 10 different sticks plugged in, which one is going to be able to, say, go into, like, Netflix and play a movie the quickest? I'd definitely say the Roku. The slowest one I've used... of all the, like, outside of Android boxes or something, would be the Xiaomi Mi Stick. But the Mi Stick then has Android software, so you can put on the apps that you're not allowed. Say, Roku is very, you have a very limited app store. It's just its own store and its basic apps, and you can't put any Android apps or APKs or anything on it. Whereas with the Xiaomi Mi Stick or something like that, it's only 1080p output as well, it's not 4K, but you can put any Android apps on it. You can set it up like your phone, pretty much, but it's definitely much slower than the Roku. The Fire Stick, I'm not sure what's the... But they definitely have a bigger store than the likes of the Roku would, but the Roku is the best performing one, I think. So it all depends on what you're looking for. If you literally just want to sign up for, say, Netflix and Amazon, Disney, whichever ones you want, those mainstream simple apps, YouTube, the Roku would probably be the best performing. The picture quality is very good, everything like that. Now, if you have a games console, like the Xbox Series S or X, or even the Xbox One, the PS4, PS5, any of the top consoles like that, you can just use those, and they work really well for apps and things like that as well. So it'll save you having to buy something if you already have it. So you can install the apps on that. You can use your controller. You can buy media remotes for a lot of them as well. I think even the PS4 had a media remote as well. I didn't have it, did I? I don't think I had it. But I have the one for the PS5, all right, and the Xbox. Yeah, so they work great as multimedia machines nowadays. So that's another way to get your, you know, if you want to start using those external apps. You'd want a pretty decent, you know, if you're getting rid of the satellite, you're going to be using the internet purely. So just make sure you have kind of a quick enough internet to be able to run them. That's the basic idea of how to get started anyway. Yeah, you have lots of different plug-in devices, and it all depends on what you want to do. You know, you have the things like Chromecast and things like that as well. You know, some TVs have it built in as well, where you can like just cast your screen of your phone onto your TV. But you're losing a lot of quality there. It's very choppy. I have used it a few times where it was something I just couldn't get. I think it was maybe a live stream of something that wouldn't. I don't know. I had to stream the screen onto my TV a few times, and it's definitely something I wouldn't do regularly, kind of thing. And that wouldn't be my TV, you know. But I think the likes of the Roku, and if you have games consoles, if you have a decent built-in apps, depends on how modern your TV and which type of TV, what software it's running. We should be able to get you going anyway. But, you know, if you could, all right, if you have slower internet, the best way to have the best chance of it being able to stream kind of smoothly enough would be to get one of the players, the streaming devices with a built-in LAN cable. It'll get you the best speed. Say, in my house now, I have maybe if I check the Wi-Fi speed on the Wi-Fi, say through my phone or something like that, I'm getting about 87 or 88, whereas I'd get maybe 97 or 98 through the LAN cable. If it's plugged in, say if I test it on the PS5 or something, I get a better speed. So yeah, that's to get you started there. It's definitely good, all right, because those apps in general, you can kind of choose what you want to watch, and you can browse by your genre, and it's very handy, you know, everything. And say if you like an old show, like say Top Gear or something, I'm not sure which one of them has it, but I've seen it on one of them where you can just go back right back to season one, you know, and you can watch old episodes, and you know, it's great, you know, that you have a whole world of shows, and you still have the brand new shows as well that they update all the time. So yeah, it's very good. So enjoy, happy streaming, as they say. So that answers that question. I notice here Ellen DeGeneres, she's the talk show host. She's announced that her talk show will end after 19 years following controversy over an alleged toxic environment on set. Yeah, there was a lot of rumours going around about there that she was hard to work with and things. And in August last year, three producers left when allegations were made by former staff members. Ratings have also taken a big hit. Speaking to NBC's Today Show, the 63-year-old seems surprised about the claims.
You know, people get picked on, but for 4 months straight for me, and then for, you know, for me to read in the press about a toxic work environment when all I've ever heard from every guest that comes on the show is what a happy atmosphere this is and what a happy place it is.
So that's kind of a strange answer. It's not exactly denying it, really, is it? It's kind of like, oh, the guests were happy enough. So, like, what about the staff? What have the staff got to say? You know, the guests are just, obviously, she's going to kind of, the guests are welcome, come in, you know, have a great. But, like, in the background, you don't see, you know, the guests don't see what's going on in the background, just to the extent of where they're kept and things like that. But when it comes to production meetings and dealing with staff before the guests arrive and setting things up, they're not going to see things like that. An Australian woman claims she woke up from a tonsil surgery with an Irish accent. Angie Yin says she has never been to Ireland and now can't help speaking the way she does. Doctors suggest her vocal cords will heal, while saying she suffers from a condition known as foreign accent syndrome. Didn't something like that happen to like Britney Spears or something? Before she just changed accent. Madonna as well, to a certain extent, had different accents, I think. On TikTok, there's a bit of audio to go with this now. I haven't heard this audio, so this should be interesting. On TikTok, Angie says she hopes her Australian accent will return.
And I've never been to Ireland before. I spent the whole day yesterday freaking out about why this is happening to me, and I went to the hospital and I also called my specialist and asked them why this is happening, and they couldn't provide any answers. They just told me to just sit tight and let the body heal.
Okay, that's more of a Darby O'Gill and the Little People Irish accent than an Irish accent. That's like an American's interpretation of an... I want to hear a little bit of this again. Hold on 1 second. That's more of like an American's interpretation of an Irish accent from the 1940s.
And I've never been to Ireland before.
Never been to Ireland?
I spent the whole day yesterday freaking out about why this is happening to me. And I went to the hospital and I also called my...
Okay, so, yeah, so it's like, that's very strange, but hopefully she, you know, hopefully she'll be, at least she's healthy and everything, and her whatever procedure she got done worked out okay. So, yeah, that's a strange one. It's a strange world we live in, all these crazy things happen, but I hope she feels better anyway. But yeah, it's a strange accent. A security researcher found Wi-Fi vulnerabilities that have existed since the beginning. The security researcher who discovered the crack Wi-Fi and crack with a K-R-A-C-K, crack, Wi-Fi vulnerability has discovered a slew of other flaws with the wireless protocol most of us use to power our online lives. The vulnerabilities relate to how Wi-Fi handles large chunks of data, with some being related to the Wi-Fi standard itself and some being related to how it's implemented by device manufacturers. The researcher, Matthew Vanhoff, calls the collection of vulnerabilities frag attacks, which the name being mashup of fragmentation and aggregation. He also says the vulnerabilities could be exploited by hackers, allowing them to intercept sensitive data or show users fake websites, even if they're using Wi-Fi networks secured with WPA2 or even WPA3. They could also theoretically exploit other devices on your home network. There are 12 different attack vectors that fall under the classification, which all work in different ways. One exploits routers accepting plain text during handshakes. One exploits routers catching data in certain types of networks, etc. If you want to read all the technical details, it's on Vanhoff's website. So you could Google, what's the guy's name again? Matthew Vanhoff, and you'll find it on his website. According to the record, Vanhoff informed the Wi-Fi Alliance about the vulnerabilities that were baked into the way Wi-Fi works, so they could be corrected before he disclosed them to the public. Vanhoff says that he's not aware of the vulnerabilities being exploited in the wild, so he was the one to discover it. Lucky it was a good guy that discovered it, or maybe it was being used for years, but there were... It wasn't found out. While he points out in the video that some of the vulnerabilities aren't particularly easy to exploit, he says others would be trivial to take advantage of. Vanhoff points out that some of the flaws can be exploited on networks using WEP security protocol, indicating that they've been around since Wi-Fi was first implemented in 1997. Though if you're still using WEP, these attacks should be the least of your concerns. So, old stuff, or the old Wi-Fi. Vanhoff says the flaws are widespread, affecting many devices, meaning that there's a lot of updating to do. So is there any update? Speaking of updating, is there anything else? The usual steps, keep your computers updated, use strong, unique passwords, don't visit shady websites, and make sure you're using HTTPS as often as possible. Other than that, it's mostly being thankful that you're not in charge of widespread IT infrastructure. so there's no update. Thing is, updating Wi-Fi infrastructure isn't always a pain. For example, before writing this article, I went to check if my router had any updates. I realized that I had forgotten my login information. I suspect I won't be allowed. Also, the router itself might need to be updated. There's also devices. That's something I missed doing myself. I don't think I've done it that often. Whose manufacturer is either gone or not realizing patches anymore. If you do, though, you should keep an eye on your router's manufacturer's website for any updates that are rolling out, especially if they're in the advisory list, which is on The Verge. Yeah, so some of the products, including Microsoft, Eero, Aruba, Cisco, Rokus, Intel, Juniper, a big list there, Samsung, Netgear, Linux, Wireless, Lenovo, those all need to be updated, and probably, because this article is out, have probably been updated already. So, but fair play to him for spotting the vulnerability before worse people did, or before it became obvious that worse people did. So I have another article open here, and it didn't. It's a blank screen. I don't know what happened there. Sony has 25 PS5 games in the works, including characters you've never seen. Sony is apparently looking to release more than 25 PS5 games under its PlayStation Studios brand, and nearly half of them will not be sequels or spin-offs. Well, that's good. You know, there's a lot of rehashing old stuff when it comes to movies and games and everything else. So some new characters, and see what'll be good. So Wired's interview with PlayStation Studio lead and former Guerrilla Games managing director Herman Hulst. That could theoretically be a lot more games than the first four-party Sony titles we already know about. Horizon Forbidden West, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, God of War Ragnarok, and Gran Turismo 7. Oh, I can't wait for Gran Turismo 7. It's probably the one game I'm going to pay full price and buy because I haven't bought, and as I said before, I haven't bought any PS5 games yet, even though I have a PS5. I've been just using the game that's built in and the PlayStation Now. 21, I must actually check it again. I haven't looked at it in a few weeks now, PlayStation Now. I wonder when is the first, what's the first PS5 game that they're going to put on it. If they put Spider-Man down pretty low, with these new games coming out now, they might cut the price of Spider-Man, so I might get that. 21 additional games could be a huge shot in the arm for PS5, especially considering how slowly exclusives are trickling out. Gran Turismo has already slipped to the next year. Sony may also be completely on the hook for producing all the games that are unaccounted for. The PlayStation Studios branding is a bit murky. It was first announced, Eric Limpel, the head of global marketing at Sony Interactive Entertainment, told GamesIndustry.biz that the branding doesn't mean that we are outright outright own the developer, but it means that we brought it up as a first party in a lot of cases. We don't own the developer. Wired specifically name drops indie games from outside studios partnered with Sony, including the upcoming Kena Bridge of Spirits and a game from Haven Studios. It's unclear whether those and similar titles will be counted towards more than 25 figure, more than the 25 figures that are coming out. Sony didn't immediately respond to a request for clarification. Because they said they were exclusive titles, or they were Sony titles, but they're made from outside studios, but kind of in partnership with Sony, that they don't own them. So it wasn't written kind of very well, or maybe I didn't read it very well. Also, if Haven Studios doesn't sound familiar, it's because it was just formed in March when noted industry figure Jade Raymond left Google when it shut down its own in-house Stadia development studios. Okay. That's not a good sign for Stadia. That speaks to the idea that we may not be seeing some of these games for quite a while. Hulst did mention that some of the games would be small, however, likely taking less development time. That, along with the fact that many of the games won't be part of existing franchises, is exciting for a non-AAA aficionados like myself, and could help relieve worries that it'll take a decade for all these games to come out. And while the games may not be first-party games, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Returnal was a PlayStation Studios game made by an outside developers, and also PlayStation Studios. Oh, that's what they're calling it. Okay. So that's why is the game not made by Sony if it's PlayStation Studios, but they're made in collaboration or whatever. And it's an example of an original game that received a lot of praise. I haven't played that now, Returnal. I was watching the YouTuber PewDiePie. He's the biggest individual YouTuber anyway. I think he got passed out on pure numbers, but he's over 100 million. He was playing that new Resident Evil game. It's the kind of thing I don't like, watching other people playing games. It's like, why would you do that? Just play it yourself, you know. I don't even watch sports that much, other than like mixed martial arts and snooker maybe. But I was clicking through and I saw he was live streaming this Resident Evil game. Half an hour later, three quarters of an hour, I was still watching it. You know, I think it's just, he's entertaining as well, but it's kind of the thing I wouldn't be into. But I like the game, it looks good. I have actually the PSVR Resident Evil game that came out, and that was quite good. I haven't played much of it though, I must go back and play it again. Sony has said it's interested in bringing more of its games into the PC in the future. Oh, wait, hold on a second now. It's also worth noting that games won't necessarily be exclusive to PS5. MLB The Show 21 is a PlayStation Studios game that's available on Xbox, and Horizon Dawn has gotten a somewhat troubled PC port. Okay, also Sony is going to be giving Xbox games as well, and or they'll be letting them have them as well, and on PCs as well. Oh yeah, so I skipped a little bit and I skipped an important part. There's also, of course, games that will come out for PS4 as well as PS5. We know that Forbidden West will be released on the older PlayStation. Yeah, I think they're continuing to do that for a while because the PS5 is very slow being fully rolled out. A lot of people are still waiting for PS5s and still trying to get them, and their prices are still high. I think I could still sell my one for a profit because they're like even the second-hand stores that Notorious give kind of poor prices, and they sell for double what they buy it off you, but I suppose they have to make money. But they're still giving more than what I paid for it, so I could still sell it for a profit now. So it's mad. So maybe that's why they're keeping games on the PS4 as well, because of that. That one never opened properly. TikTok adds another way to remix videos with green screen duets, combining two of TikTok's most popular features. TikTok launched a new feature today that combines the existing duet with green screen formats, letting people use other TikToks as the background for their own. So I had TikTok for a while, and it's kind of funny and stuff, but then I kind of read a few articles about it, and it's apparently one of the worst apps on the net when it comes to like taking your information, like getting into your, I don't know about getting into your contacts and stuff, but like having access to your phone and running in the background and all the permissions you have to give it. It's supposed to be one of the worst ones that way. Like any of the people that are kind of, that I wouldn't be as knowledgeable, but I've listened and read people that are knowledgeable that know about like which apps are kind of like just, they just want to give you the app. They don't want any of your stuff. To the ones that want to hide as much as possible, or to get as much information from you, or have as much access to your phone, your information and things like that as possible. They said that TikTok was one of the worst when it comes to that kind of things. So after that, I kind of got rid of it. But it's still been successful, and it's still, you know, I watch YouTube sometimes, the TikTok compilations and stuff. You know, it is a good idea, the app, all right, but I don't know, I'd be a bit dodgy about the amount of permissions, that kind of thing. Asus introduces the new Zenfone 8 Flip and mini flagship Zenfone 8. Also, these are they flip phones? What are they? Asus has taken a slightly different turn in this year's Zenfone series with a Zenfone 8 Flip. Looks like a lot of previous year's phones with a large screen and a flip-out camera mechanism. Oh, so it's just the camera flips out. Does it show? There's no picture of it. Oh, yes, it is. I see it now. It was actually like the Samsung Galaxy A9. I think it was the A8 or A9. One of them had a normal-looking camera in the back, you know, like a square glass thing on the back of the camera. And then you want to take a selfie, and that whole glass part pops up, and it's pointing forward. So you can take a selfie with your full camera. So that's brilliant. So the Zenfone 8 is using the same kind of idea. It's redesigned as a smaller, one-hand-friendly device, a kind of Android phone, Android iPhone mini. The two phones make their global debut today, priced at €600 for the Zenfone 8 and €799 for the Zenfone 8 Flip. Asus says that only the Zenfone 8 will come to North America, and it's expected this summer. It says in this article the US price is still being finalized, but we have the euro, so we don't care. No, I'm honest. That's the euro price, is the 599, the 799. The Zenfone 8 and Zenfone 8 Flip both use the Snapdragon 888. That's the current top Snapdragon. But there's about to be... That's about as far as the similarities go. The Zenfone 8 features a 5.9-inch 1080p OLED with 120Hz refresh rate. It will be sold in configurations of 16GB of RAM. Oh, that's pretty good. A 256 of storage, and includes IP68 waterproof rating. Both the 8 and the 8 Flip support 5G, but when the Zenfone 8 arrives in the US... It will only work at AT&T and sub 6 gigahertz 5G networks. Also, it's 5G, but it uses, in America, it'll use the lesser of the 5G networks. Some of them are, I was looking at a YouTuber talking about it, that in America, I don't know about here, but some of the 5G networks are just like a boosted version of 4G, that they're not, it's not proper 5G. But there's no set definition or something for 5G, or I think maybe it just uses them. I don't know. Does it even use the millimeter wave? I'm not sure. But they were saying that there's definitely different levels of 5G, and there's not as much proper 5G as they say. The Zenfone 8's two rear cameras are borrowed from the Zenfone 7 series. A 64 megapixel standard wide and an OIS, optical image, oh, that's good. I always love to see optical image stabilization because it's the best type of stabilization. That kicks out 16 megapixel images with a 12 megapixel ultra wide. Since the camera array doesn't flip forward to play the role of selfie camera, there's now a 12 megapixel... Wait, what? I thought there's pictures here. Is it only the... Oh, it's only the bigger one that flips forward, is it? Wait a second now. Since the camera array doesn't flip forward to play the role of a selfie camera, there's now a 12 megapixel camera under an off-center hole punch in the front panel. The phone's compact size... It looks like maybe the smaller one doesn't flip forward, so it shouldn't call it the flipped in. It should be just like not flip. Just call it the Zenfone something else. The phone's compact size, so the bigger one is the one that flips the cameras forward, I guess. The phone's compact size is reflected in its 4,000 milliampere batteries, which is much smaller than the previous year's 5,000. So that's a pity. It supports 30-watt wired charging. That includes the charger, but it doesn't offer wireless charging. So, yeah, there's like lots of phones now with 60-watt and 50-watt and more charging. So that's a bit slower charging as well. But it's standard, I suppose. But it doesn't offer wireless charging. There are dedicated dual stereo speakers and a 3.5 headphone jack. The Zenfone 8 Flip is by... necessity a much larger device with a 6.67-inch screen, 1080p. So even the bigger one is still only 1080p. Also, it kind of clarifies here now that, there's the Zenfone 8 and Zenfone 8 Flip. Oh, yeah, so, okay. But it says the Flip has only a 90Hz refresh rate, where the non-Flip version has 120. It offers a bigger 5,000mAh battery, 30-watt charging, includes 8GB of RAM and 256 of storage. So the smaller one has, the cheaper one has more RAM and the same storage and has a better refresh rate. So you're paying like lots of extra for the flip out. That's strange, for the flip out camera. The main attraction is its flip out camera. That's, I don't know, that's weird. The triple camera hardware is borrowed from the Zenfone 7, including a 64 megapixel main camera, 12 megapixel ultra wide, and an 8 megapixel telephoto with 3 optical zoom. Asus says the module itself has a stronger motor with better endurance. Users can expect to get up to 300,000 flips out of it. A custom Rhino Shield case will be sold separately in some markets, with a sliding cover to protect the housing and a sensor that automatically activates the camera when the cover is opened. That's the new Zenfone 8 and Flip. Amazon wins 303 million court fight in blow to EU tax crusade. Amazon has won its fight against the EU order to pay about €250 million in back taxes to Luxembourg. In another blow to competition chief Margaret Vestager's crusade against preferential deals. The bloc failed to show that Luxembourg had given the US online retailer special treatment in violation of state aid rules. The EU's General Court ruled yesterday. The victory follows last year's landmark defeat of Vestager against Apple, which had also contested an order that it paid $13 billion in Irish-backed taxes. So they haven't been as successful against the big companies. Yeah, I suppose the big companies have a lot of money behind them. They're like states themselves. They have huge money behind them and teams of lawyers. So I suppose they set these things up knowing that they're going to win these cases too in the first place. They have lawyers involved in when they make these moves and set up new businesses and things, knowing that under certain laws or whatever that they'll be safe enough. Yeah, so I presume they spend millions and things like that. Dogecoin loses a third of price after Elon Musk calls it a hustle on Saturday Night Live. Dogecoin lost more than a third of its price. So Bitcoin is like an online currency. I don't understand that much about it, but it's like an online currency and cryptocurrency. And Dogecoin is like using kind of old Bitcoin software, kind of, and it was just set up as a kind of a joke. But people had been buying it and stuff. But like, it's a lot cheaper. A Bitcoin is, I don't know, is it like 60 grand or something for one Bitcoin? But a Dogecoin is like 50 cents American or something like that. So people were just buying it for fun. Dogecoin was quoted as low as 0.1416 crypto exchange. So I've never bought Bitcoin. I've never set up an app for it. I tried it a couple of times and I don't know, it was asking for bank details and I couldn't be bothered. I was trying to find an easy way to just like, oh, just log into PayPal and give them €2 and buy some Ethereum or something and see how it gets on over a couple of years or something, just for the crack. But there was none easy enough for me to set up. If anyone wants to give me some tech advice when it comes to like Bitcoin or anything like that, you can email reception102@gmail.com and mark it for Tech Thursday. But no, I haven't bought anything like that. But apparently this Dogecoin, which is, you know, it's more of a bit of fun than an actual, it is a currency and everything. It's like it can go up and down and things like that. But Elon Musk, you know, he was never like serious about it, like that he's investing his whole portfolio in Dogecoin. It was always a bit of a joke, you know, that because there was a picture of a dog on the front of it, a meme, it was a bit of a joke, and he loves memes and things, so he was never serious about it anyway. And then when he just said the truth about it, what he always kind of says is that it was a bit of a joke, a hustle, you know. But yeah, so he was laughing as well at the same time when he said it, and it was on a sketch. So yeah, there was no surprise there. PayPal profit tops estimate. Oh, speaking of Elon Musk, I think he was one of the guys that set up PayPal, wasn't it? That's where he got his first fortune. I don't think he's involved with them anymore. PayPal profit tops estimate on digital payments boom. And it's surprising now because there's a lot of competition there for them now as well. One of them, I had the app for it. I forget the other names, but there's two or three other ones going, but they're definitely still the biggest. They've reported it's their strongest first quarter on record and beat profit estimates with a coronavirus-driven shift to online shopping. So let's see, California-based PayPal processed a total of $285 billion in payments in the first quarter, up 50% from the previous year. That's a lot. And added 14.5 million net to new active customers. Our strong first quarter results demonstrate sustained momentum in our business as the world shifts into the digital economy. So yeah, they're doing well for themselves. Oh, Venmo was the other one. Yeah, that's kind of one of their competitors. PayPal's, oh no, Venmo is PayPal's app, which allows individuals in the US to send money to each other. Also, Venmo is one of theirs. Oh no, what was the other one I was thinking of? I forget. But yeah, they processed $51 billion in payments in the quarter, up 63%. So yeah, they're doing very well for themselves. Android 12 release date, new features and everything else we know. We're expecting to get a first look at a finalized Android 12 at Google I.O. next week. And here's what we know so far. When will Android 12 get released? Generally, but it usually releases the final version of a major Android update around August or September. Android 11 arrived in September 8, Android 10 arrived in September 3. As always, it will be a free download for Android users as long as your phone is allowed to have it. Android users, like older phones won't get it. Like my phone won't get it now. I got an update from 9 to 10 it came with 9. I got upgraded to 10 and I haven't got 11. Certain phones will get more updates as well. My brother has a phone that's older than mine and he has 11. So I kind of missed out on one, but I'm going to hang on to my phone for another year anyway because the specs are still plenty good enough anyway. And I haven't been like refused. You know, if you have like a really old version of Android, some apps won't download for you and stuff. That hasn't happened to me yet, so I'm still fine till next year, and then I'll decide on a new phone, possibly. Android users have been eagerly awaiting the arrival of the latest version, Android 12, since Google unveiled it. So here's everything we learned. So can I download the Android 12 beta? Android 12 is currently available to download in developer beta. However, as the name suggests, the version is meant only for developers. Most betas are buggy, it can harm your device. If you still want to try it out, that you can recommend download it on a tester device and not your primary phone. Typically Google releases a public beta of the Android. It's a pity they don't, like, with I know Windows does it as well, but Windows is pretty good. Like, you can have a Windows 7 computer and put Windows 10 on it, so they're pretty good. So it's a pity Google don't do the same, but I suppose they want you buying new phones and getting the newest software. How will I download Android 12 when it's generally available? As is usual the case with major Android updates, exactly how and when you get the update depends on who makes your device, like Google, Samsung, OnePlus and Xiaomi. But generally, once the update starts rolling out, you'll go to the System Advanced System Update check for update. What devices will be compatible with Android 12? With the vast number of Android phones available, it's difficult to list all the ones which will support Android 12, but generally you can expect the Google Pixel 3 and later to be compatible with Android, along with newer phones from Samsung, Huawei, LG, Nokia, Motorola, OnePlus, Oppo and other manufacturers. Well, Oppo is kind of in the family of phones as Realme is my phone, so they'd be kind of under the Oppo umbrella. But I think it's probably too old now, even though it's only like a year and a half old or whatever it is. The website Get Droid Tips has collected an extensive list of devices, so you can see your device there if it'll get it. What new features will Android 12 include? Would be a major update with a number of new features, app privacy features, redesign notifications, double tap options. Another new feature lets you tap the back of your Android phone a set number of times to trigger action of your choosing once you enable it in the settings under gestures. One-handed mode. Android 12 appears to include a new design changes that make it easier to operate Android phones with one hand. Face-based auto rotate. Today you can turn your phone portrait or landscape and the screen will adjust to you. That's actually a great idea. I'm often in bed and I forget to turn off the auto rotate and it rotates and I have to turn it off. And but if it could see your face and always keep it what direction your eyes are aligned to, which seems like a simple enough thing, and so they seem to be doing that now. It will adjust with you. The Android 12 on Pixel phones, it appears you'll be able to choose to auto rotate based on the way your head is turned. So that's a good idea, if you're lying down. Yeah, it says that on the thing, yeah. Trash and recycle bin management. Android has a hidden recycle bin trash feature that Google may allow you to manage with Android 12. I didn't know that now. So if you delete stuff, it's still kind of there and stuff. So that might be handy if you're looking for something that you lost or something, but is there a way to get it back? According to XDA developers, it looks like you'll be able to see how much storage space your trashed items take up and clear the trash as needed. Like with a PC. For more, check out cool things Android 12 will be able to do, Android 11 can't, and the best Android, also they're trying to get you to click onto a link on CNET, so there's more about that on CNET. Just to quickly go through, the time is flying again today, as usual. Do we have another window that won't open for me? That's strange. Amazon updates Echo Show 8, Echo Show 5 with new cameras and more colours. The retail guide also includes a new Echo Show 5 kids. Echo Show 5 kids. Also, they're going to make a kids version. The new Echo Show, which costs around £85, includes a new blue colour model and a higher resolution camera with double the pixels. Company also announced a £95 Echo Show Kids 5, a kid-friendly version of the Echo Show 5, which comes with 1 year of Amazon Kids service and a 2-year replacement guarantee. The new Show 8, which costs £130, will come with a wide-angle camera that keeps the video caller centred in and in the frame. Similar to that of the Show 10, although the wide angle means there's no need for the screen to physically move. Also, it's just going to kind of crop you and keep you in the centre of the frame. See, the other ones, some of them can move around physically and follow you around the place when you're walking back and forth. So that's kind of handy. I like the ones that move, because if you're looking at a recipe or something, and I'd often be going from the counter over to the cooker or back and forth, or chopping thing on one thing and mixing in a bowl on the other counter, and I kind of have an L-shaped counter. So if I had it kind of in the middle, say if it's a V shape, where the point of the V, and so if I move around, and you know, how much salt should I put in, and is it a tablespoon or a teaspoon or whatever, I'd be doing a good bit of cooking. It'd be handy to have. I was thinking about getting one of them, but then I was like looking at one, and it was like, oh, it's fairly reasonable, and like that's pretty good. And then you see, oh, there's a bigger one, and kind of one that has more stuff in it, but then that's too expensive. So I don't want to pay for the bigger one, but I don't want to lose out on the specs of the other, and I ended up getting nothing. So yeah, So that's interesting. I'll just keep going. Mass Effect director hopes Legendary Edition will change feelings about infamous ending. So they're doing a Legendary Edition of Mass Effect, and it's going to be bigger and better. Brings remastered versions of Commander Shepard's Adventures to PS4, Xbox One, and PC on Friday. You can also play on PS5 and Xbox Series S and X, with backwards compatibility, which will shorten loading times. So that's pretty good. Tesla will no longer accept Bitcoin over... so they were taking Bitcoin, Tesla were, to pay for cars, because Elon Musk is into cryptocurrency. But then he probably knew about this. I don't know why he's come out now and he said that because... they use like these big banks of computers, thousands of computers, for mining Bitcoin. I don't exactly know exactly what that entails. Bitcoin isn't something I haven't gotten big into. But somehow they can use banks of computers to mine Bitcoin somehow. I don't know what that means, but they make money out of it anyway. But it uses a lot of energy to do that, and the energy comes from, you know, coal and oil and all power stations, and he said it's bad for the environment, all these banks of servers mining Bitcoin. So he said he's not going to take money from that. We're concerned about increased use of fossil fuels for Bitcoin mining and transactions, especially coal, which is the worst emissions of any fuel. Didn't other people say, like, if you have very pure coal, that, like, the pure carbon coal, like high quality coal, that the emissions are very low or something? But I don't know. That was just something I read somewhere that could be completely wrong. I don't know. Which is the worst emissions of any fuel? A cryptocurrency is a good idea on many levels. That they were saying it's impure coal is the worst and that the pure coal isn't as bad. But sure, it's all burning. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know. I could be completely wrong, so take nothing I just said into any consideration. Cryptocurrency is a good idea on many levels, and we believe that it has a promising future, but this cannot come at the cost of the environment. Tesla will not be selling any Bitcoin, selling any cars with Bitcoin. They won't be selling their own Bitcoin that they bought either, and they intend to use it for transaction as soon as mining transitions to a more sustainable energy. So once they start using their servers powered by solar and stuff, they'll come back doing it again. Last few stories, come back selling cars to people using Bitcoin. Amazon has 250 million back tax. Oh, yes, no, we read that already. I just had it open somewhere else. U.S. petrol supplies tighten after Colonial Pipeline hack. U.S. Motors. Oh, yeah, so... a pipeline, like a processing plant or something, got hacked by these ones trying to trying to get... How much do they want off of them? Does it say? I don't know. This ransomware Russian crowd shut them down pretty much and said, you have to pay us tons of money or we won't let you go back up and running again. And because of that, a lot of places ran out of petrol. There was lines for miles and miles long in a lot of different places. There was a big upheaval over it. North Carolina, Virginia, Florida, all declared states of emergency because they had no... The petrol stations were empty, so it was mad stuff going on there. I don't know. It says U.S. Motors have been urged not to hoard fuel. Oh, that was happening too. People were coming on with their gallon drums and filling up. Some drivers in the southeast were seen stocking up as petrol stations began running dry and prices rose. But it's been U.S. petrol. So I don't know. Has it been sorted out yet? The Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm said there was no need for motorists to hoard petrol. But sure, people do it out of fears for their safety and need to be getting around the place and stuff, especially in the likes of Texas, because everything is so far away that you really rely on vehicles, because the nearest house to you could be half an hour's driveway. Tesla crash, autopilot was off, says preliminary report. So it wasn't the autopilot's fault, somebody died in a car crash in a Tesla. They always investigate Teslas for the autopilot, but apparently in this one it wasn't at fault, it was just the person was in control of the car themselves. So that's all my stories for today. Hope you've enjoyed Tech Thursday. If you have any questions, as I always say, 069 66 200 by phone, 087 166 9800, but the best way is probably by reception102@gmail.com. mark it down for Tech Thursday or myself, Patrick Sheehan. And that's all been the latest in tech. Thanks for listening. And I'll talk to you next week. Peace.